this set of three parshiyos, actually, the set of three parshiyos that we're in the middle of, is you have the highest concentration of mitzvos located in one section of the Torah in this set of parshiyos, and the number of mitzvos and isurim that appear in this parsha that appear in other places as well are many. I don't know exactly how many, but one prominent example of that is the Isra of Bal Tosif and the Isra of Bal Tigra. They both appear in this week's parsha, and they appear elsewhere as well. And Rashi gives a few examples of Bal Tosif, none of which are particularly surprising. Right? Rashi writes, Lo Sosif Alav, Chamisha Totafas Betvilin, Chamisha Minim Belulav, Arba Brachos Bebrachos Kohanim. You shouldn't have a fifth Minim Belulav, you shouldn't have a fifth Parsha in Betvilin, you shouldn't add a fourth Bracha in Brachos Kohanim. So those are all things that I get. I understand why someone might have that. Right? Someone has, they understand that their Tefillin is like their statement of dedication to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and maybe there's some other section of the Torah, or maybe even of Tanakh, that really talks to them, or a favorite poem or something that they think really expresses their avodas Hashem. I don't know, Noach was a big tzaddik, you know, from and that really expresses their hargashas of avodas Hashem. So they want to put that in their tefillin. I understand that. I understand that in the lulav that you want to wave something that means something more to you. I understand why birchas kohanim that you're going to have such a thing that the kohanim are so in love with Klal Yisrael. They're so in love with the Jewish people. They want to give them an extra bracha, so they want to throw in something extra. Hamzila halacha. Rav Si Pesach Frank has a tshuva, a little bit of a humorous question. But he says, you know, it's a big tzarachiyun. After a kohen finishes duchening, what does everyone say? Shkoyach, shkoyach kohenim. And what do they say? Baruch tiyah. Bal Tosif, right there on the spot. They were most of an extra bracha to Baruch kohenim. So Zivis of Frank has a tshuva about that, about why isn't that a violation of Bal Tosif? And shkoyanim, be careful to... I don't know, when they say Shkoyach Kohanim, say no problem, you know, like, or something like that, right, instead of Baruch Tiyah. So maybe that's an issue of Bal Tosif. So the Sforno also gives examples of Bal Tosif, but the Sforno goes in a totally different direction. And what he does is he zooms out, and he looks at the Pesukim that immediately precede the mitzvah of Lo Sosif Alav Lo Tigra Mimenu. The Torah tells us, right before that, Lo Sasakein L'Hashem Elokecha, Ki kol tovas Hashem asher sana asu leloheihem, ki gamis b'neihem v'espenoseihem yisrufu be'eish leloheihem, es kol adavar asher anochi mitzaveh eschem osot tishmu la'asos, lo sosif v'lo sigru umimenu. Don't burn your kids as a form of idol worship, and also don't be mosif or be goreya from the Torah. Which is a little bit of a strange context. Now, in the breakup of Prakim, which is not a Jewish thing, the breakup of Prakim in the Chumash, those Pesukim are separated from the Pasuk of Bal Tosif. You understand why the Christians did that, right? Meaning because they have nothing to do with Bal Tosif. But in the breakup of Parshios in the Torah, Psuchos Astumos in the Torah, it's in the same Parsha. So that suggests that there's a connection between them. So the Sforno says, yeah, of course there's a connection between them. Lo Sosif Alav, Ki Ulai Tosif Davar Nimaset Lo Yisbara. When you try to be Mosif to the Torah, you might take a guess at what Hashem will appreciate, and you're going to guess totally wrong, and it's going to turn out to be something that Hashem really doesn't appreciate, that he's not happy with at all. You're going to say, I want to serve Hashem so badly that I'm going to do something that everything I know about God tells me that he's going to appreciate this suggestion, and then you're going to go burn your kid as a sacrifice to God, and God really doesn't like that. He's nimas. He finds this to be disgusting. So he's not going to be happy with it at all. And that's why we can't be mosif to the Torah. Because while it's true that when you might guess correctly, it may be a beautiful thing. If it's something that Hashem actually appreciates, you might guess incorrectly, and you end up burning a kid for no reason. And Hashem will say, that's repulsive to me. It just smells like a bunch of burnt flesh. It's not a reyach nichoach to me at all whatsoever. Now that example of the Sforno is extremely, extremely curious. The implication is that you have a Jew who's completely l'shem shemayim, spend time thinking about what type of voluntary service HaKadosh Baruch Hu would appreciate, and he's going to come to the conclusion that some form of gruesome child sacrifice is just the thing that Hashem loves. It's just the kind of thing. Everything I know about this religion says we don't care about our kids. You know, as if the religion doesn't emphasize the importance of children enough. Go to the beginning. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose Avram Avinu? Right? Ki Yadativ. What's Ki Yadativ? That, L'man Asher Yitzave Es Banav Es Beso Achrav. Because he's going to educate his children in these ways. That's why Avram was chosen. Not because he's such a great Eved Hashem, which he was, but that's not why he was chosen. Not because he discovered God, which he did. He was chosen because he's going to have children and he's going to teach them these ways. The very first mitzvah in the Torah. Right, whenever I meet with Chassan and Kalu before they get married, they want to know about birth control. So we go through the basic background. So the basic background is there is a mitzvah in the Torah. And I always say, not just any mitzvah in the Torah, the very first mitzvah in the Torah. Not just the very first mitzvah in the Torah, the only mitzvah Chazal really referred to as a mitzvah rabbah, as a very great mitzvah, is pruravu. And yet, you're going to have a person who's going to say that probably God doesn't love kids so much. He probably wants me to sacrifice my kid. The Ramban describes child sacrifice with the following words. The Ramban writes, "Shehu davar mituav lefnei Hashem lishpoch dam naki va'af kilio sachzari al priya betan." That it's a double avera, because what did the kid do? He's innocent, so to kill him is terrible. And what kind of person are you that a person is gonna have achzarius, is gonna be cruel to his own children? It's unthinkable. So sometimes when I have that birth control conversation, so sometimes the young couple will say, "We're very excited. We want to have kids, but our parents are gonna kill us if we have children." So to which my answer is usually, then your parents are probably not Jewish. Meaning there is no Jewish parent that when it actually happens, yeah, they may say they're going to get, but then when it actually happens, they are the first to Costco to buy the diapers, right? Meaning like there's no doubt that when it actually comes down to it. How is it possible? This is a long way of saying this question. How is it possible that anyone is ever going to come to the conclusion that knowing everything you know about Avodas Hashem, that Hashem is going to view it as a beautiful hidur to sacrifice your own kids? So I want to share with you something that Tversky said a while ago, and I think is a critical idea, and it dovetails very nicely with something that the Rosh Yeshiva Chafetz Chaim, Rav Henoch, Zichrono Livracha, said as well. We often very much underestimate the influence of the culture around us. Rav Tversky just gave a mashal. He said, you know, imagine you walk outside, and you see people walking on their hands rather than walking with their feet. So you'd think that would be strange. But if you were to go outside day after day and constantly see people walking on their hands, ultimately you wouldn't find it strange at all. You would just think, oh, they found a better way to walk, right? Meaning it increases upper body strength and whatever, right? Meaning great, probably good for something, I don't know, circulation, I guess. There are so many behaviors that are either bizarre or useless, or in the worst cases, immoral, that have become commonplace simply because that's what people do. And once that's what society does and society has accepted, we're not turned off by it anymore. You know, a very benign example would be fashion trends, right? Why we ever thought that, I'm a child of the 1980s, that women's shoulder pads were like, you know, you probably don't even know what that means, but like it was a thing. Like all women's clothing had like these massive, they looked like football players, these massive shoulder pads. Like that was the style of the 80s. Isn't that attractive to you, right? Don't you want your wife to look like an offensive lineman, right? So, but that was, why did we think that was a good idea? It just is. It's just they did it. So people did it. So then everyone goes along. That's the way all the fashion works. None of this is is objectively more attractive or less attractive, or sometimes less. Rav Henoch in Chidushei Alev explains that when Rav Jed Zasla bought me Chidushei Alev, I don't even know where you can find it. It's in phenomenal Sefer HaChumash. It's Rav Henoch's Parsha Shiurim. It was written up by Rabbi Luban from Florida, not Rabbi Luban from Edison, his brother from Florida. Rav Henoch writes, or it was written up in his name, that when we're surrounded by a culture of Ovdei Avodah Zarah, then child sacrifice becomes this very chashuva thing. It's natural for our own sense of right and wrong to deteriorate. And even if there's no natural yetzer hara for something, like hurting your own children, there's no natural yetzer hara for that. But if the culture is that people see that as just and right and lofty and spiritual, then you begin to see it that way as well. The Torah in Parshas Achremos, Tversky had a Gevaldika Ha'ara, the Torah writes, Kimase Eretz Mitzrayim Asher Yishavtem Ba Lo Sa'asu, Uchimase Eretz Kenan Asher Ani Meviyascham Shoma Lo Sa'asu, Uvuchukoseim Lo Sedechu. So Tversky points out that there are some extra words in this passage. Kimase Eretz Mitzrayim Asher Yishavtem Ba, I know, I've read the book up until now. Like, I know what Mitzrayim was. Right? That's what kind of all of the first half of Sefer Shemos was about. You need to tell me, Asher Yishavtem Ba, that you dwelled there in Eretz Mitzrayim? If you've been paying a little bit of attention to the Chumash up until that point, you know exactly what Eretz Mitzrayim is, that you stayed there for some time. Eretz Kenan Asher Ani Mevi Eschem Shama. Almost as superfluous. Of course we know that's always been the dream from Parshas Lech Lecha. That's been the dream, Asher Ani Mevi Eschem Shama, that you're going to go to Eretz Yisrael. It's the destination. Why does the Torah need to describe those places? And Rav Tversky Shlita explains that lest you think you don't have to have your guard up against these Yisurim because they're so obviously, blatantly wrong and immoral, you should realize that when you're in a place, Asher Yishavtem Ba, and you're exposed to something, it starts to seem normal and healthy to you. The unattractive, the unthinkable, becomes very attractive and very thinkable for us. You live there for 210 years, you grew accustomed to a lot of those behaviors, and you're going to see it again. Asher Ani Mevi Eschem Shama, and you need to be on guard that those behaviors are not Jewish behaviors. Mesh Chachma has a comment in Parshas B'Shalach. The Torah says, "Vayihi b'shalach paro asa'am v'lo nacham elokim darach eretz plishtim ki karov hu." And the Meshech Chacham explains, "Ki karov hu" is not about proximity, but it's about the familiarity of the values and culture of the plishtim, because we spent so much time in Mitzrayim, right? Hashem didn't want us to go darach eretz plishtim because it would be a little too familiar to us. It would be a little too comfortable for us. Ki karov hu. It's still close. It still would touch a certain place in our hearts. There's a certain level of nostalgia. I think of Scheinberg, Zichron Lebrach, he used to say that you know, he left America in like the 1930s or something. When he hears that the Yankees won the World Series, he still has a little bit of simcha. He still wants a little part of him still wants to make a kiddush and shul. You know, like it's a little. The last time he saw the Yankees, Babe Ruth was playing, but he still had that. Kikarovu, that it's going to touch a certain something in your neshama inside of you when you're used to something. My friend Rabbi Ari Wasserman, the dean's brother, tells the story of a young woman who entered the workforce for the first time, and she was very troubled by all the nivel ped that she was exposed to. So she sent an email to one of her rabbis from seminary, one of her rabbeim, asking for eitzah. At all this nivel ped, how do I not, you know, how do I handle it? It's so disgusting and it's terrible. And somehow the email, you know, not every rabbi responds to email exactly when they get it. And so a few months went by, and then he thought of her, and he's like, oh, wait, she sent me an email. I never responded to her. So he went back to his emails, and he found the email, and he responded. He said, I'm so sorry for not reaching out sooner. And she said, no, don't worry about it. It doesn't bother me anymore. You know, right? Meaning at a certain point, it just doesn't bother you anymore. And that's obviously tragic. There are so many rayas to this in our day and age. And it's important to be on the lookout for this. The example Rav Tversky gave is the attitudes toward LGBT. I don't want to get into that right now. In specific, you can listen to what Tversky said about it. And it cuts in both ways, right? And I guess we'll get into it a little bit. The insensitivity that some people have to those who genuinely struggle with the Yetzer Hara is not a Torah value. And the overly accepting attitude, including attending what Tversky termed sham religious weddings and accepting couples as couples, is also very, very far from a Torah value. We're living in a time with values that are very, very much not our own. And you hear them enough and you start to think that these are your values. The example I can think of that struck me last week, there was generally you don't get political, but there was a national convention of one of the political parties last week, and like everything that's said at a political convention is based on polling and research and what's going to talk to the hearts and minds of the people. What are people going to connect to? What's going to galvanize them? What's going to make them excited? What's going to make them say, "Ah, that's what makes my heart sing"? So what is the platform that they kept on pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing? You will be able to kill any fetus you want. And that's morality. That's perfect. Look, the halachos of abortion are not the Christian halachos of abortion, right? I mean, we don't have that same view. But to view this as like a moral ideal that, the rights over your own body to do whatever you want with whatever baby is growing in there at whatever time, that's what we stand for, that's what we're going to fight for, and that's what this country is buying, right? Meaning the other party has to stop talking about that issue because they're going to lose if they talk about that issue. That's the fabric of the culture of the country is something, and lest you think it doesn't have any impact on the Orthodox Jewish community, on the very from Orthodox Jewish community, where, by the way, poskim do allow abortion sometimes in very extreme circumstances. But if you don't think that that has an impact, I could tell you, as someone who answers a fair share of shilas, or at least fields them and then punts them up to my rebbe, it does have an impact, right? That twice in 2 weeks, to hear a shayla, one from another rav and one that I got myself from someone saying, "We got pregnant, but like, we really weren't planning on this. You know, like our youngest kid is already 7. You know, like this is unexpected. Okay, b'shat tova, what? You know, like, no, but the doctor said that, like, you know, one of the options is abortion. We haven't decided yet. But we're just wondering. Is everyone healthy? Yeah, everyone's healthy. Thank God. Right? Everyone's healthy. Baruch Hashem. Everyone's healthy. Is there any reason that, like, you know, like, is everyone emotionally healthy? Yeah, I mean, this is going to be hard, though. I mean, like, we had a plan of finishing paying yeshiva tuition, buying the apartment that we wanted in Israel, and like, this is going to be, like, a big deal. You know how expensive kids are? Yeah, I have an idea how expensive kids are. But, like, that why does that shaila come up? Twice, and I'm just one rabbi. Why does that come up? It comes up because we're living in a culture where that's spoken about as a moral ideal. So maybe we're not there, but it has an impact. It definitely has an impact. The idea that, you know, what was the worst thing? Again, I hate getting so political, but like it's such a layup. What was the worst thing politically, the biggest political mistake made in this presidential campaign was when a vice presidential candidate suggested that people who have children have a higher stake in the future of this country. What? You need to have children? Children mean something? I mean, my gosh. You know, like, you could see why eventually sacrificing kids is going to be something that's like, you know, okay, a Jew thinks that's probably what Hashem wants. You know, Hashem wants that there should be, for my own, spiritual development, moral development, whatever development, that I should burn a kid to Molech. You know, and that's something that a person, that's what the Sforna is saying, that you're going to guess wrong in terms of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants because we're so influenced by the culture that surrounds us. And it's particularly tricky when you interact a lot with the culture that's around you. That's why there's a certain safety that some Jews have in sort of locking themselves off. It comes with costs also, a lot of costs. But at least for those of us who are going to be interacting, I do very little interaction. I'm in yeshiva my whole life. But for those of us who are going to be interacting with the broader culture around us, or with those who do interact with the broader culture around us, it is very, very critical to be strong in terms of understanding what exactly the Das Torah, not in the yeshivish sense, the Das Torah in the sense of the Das of the Torah, actually is, and to understand that and to stand for what's right. Okay, now let's do some halacha. It came to my attention.